doesn't.
Call the House Committee on Judiciary to order February 9th. Staff, do you want to tell us the... Talked about both of the bills that we're going to be dealing with today, and then we'll get Representative Thatcher up.
Thank you, Chair Krieger, Chair Barker, members of the committee. The measures up for public hearing today are House Bills 2787 and House Bill 2792. House Bill 2787 prohibits public body from disclosing identifying information about persons applying for or license to carry concealed handguns absent or in a pending case unless necessary for a criminal justice purpose. And House Bill 2792 provides non-residents who are authorized to carry concealed handguns in another state with the protection provided to persons with Oregon concealed handgun licenses.
Thank you. Just one little comment. These type of bills sometimes bring out the emotions in people, and we want to be very respectful of people who have opinions different than ours. But also, the chair is very concerned about people making statements that are not accurate. And you got 90 years of police service up here, and we know what's accurate, so be very careful because you will be challenged. And with that, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2787 and 2792 and ask Representative Thatcher to come up, please.
Oh, yeah. Here's what we're asking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs and the rest of the committee. I'm Kim Thatcher. I'm from Representative Kim Thatcher. I'm from Kaiser, and my area covers St. Paul and Newburgh as well. I'll start with 2787. It's 8 lines long, but it basically says information about concealed handgun licensee applicants and holders in this state may not be disclosed to the public. The only exceptions would be for law enforcement or criminal justice purposes or under a court order. Now, just backing up to 1973 was the Watergate era, and that's when Oregon's public records laws first came into being, and they were designed to hold government accountable, shine a light on the business of government. And Oregon didn't even have a concealed handgun license until 16 years later. Back then, the information related to those licenses should have been made off-limits to public disclosure, but since they didn't do it then, let's do it now. The problem we've run into has occurred many times in the past decade where a newspaper or others, some other organization, asks the sheriff for the entire list of all CHL holders. And there was a case a couple of years ago, just for the record, out of Southern Oregon that ended up with a ruling by the Oregon Court of Appeals last year. And it put the sheriffs in a bit of a box. It basically said they have to release all those names. And this bill was introduced at the request of the Sheriff's Association. And some of them I know are here today, and I know many have at least given you letters of support, and they'll tell you why what they've been through these past few years to respond to the concerns of concealed handgun license holders. Now, remember, the people who wanted to get a concealed handgun license did not ask to be put in the public spotlight, hence the term concealed. They did not ask to have all sorts of personal information about themselves and their family put in a file at the sheriff's office, but in order to be able to carry concealed, they had to fill out the forms, and hence they did not ask to have to get police permission to exercise a basic civil right. They never asked to be required to pay a fee so they and their loved ones could feel safe. So now all that personal information they give to the sheriff's office is now a public record, and it's not right. Now, I'll show you what kind of information might be released here. Here are applications. They're blank. Applications from the 36 different counties, and there's some of these are up to 6 pages long, and they're asking all kinds of different information. These are I think they've become standardized a little bit over time, but this is what's in their files, and there's all kinds of juicy information. You've got cell phone numbers, what kind of guns they have in their house, whether they were dishonorably discharged from the military, what controlled substances they're taking, if they're in diversion, and all of it would be subject to disclosure. And we're not talking about just the CHL holders, people who have actually gotten the license. We're talking about anybody who applied for it. To me, fixing or releasing this private information about concealed handgun owners defeats the whole purpose of the concealed part, and these are not government entities. This is just personal private information and not, I don't believe, should be revealed. I believe it's time to change that. It should be nobody's business whether a single mom has gotten a CHL to protect her children or whether a woman has been stalked and one would like to carry concealed for her own protection. This is a privacy issue. Many people get these licenses because they're concerned about their safety. One of the sheriffs was nice enough to send us a huge box with names redacted, and we were able to put together a list. There's about 1,400 responses as to why they do not want their information revealed. It ranged from anywhere from people being victims of domestic violence with restraining orders against their ex-spouses to convenience store owners who carry large sums of money late at night. The point is, concealed handgun licensees are responsible citizens. They've gone through the hoops. They're going in there, and they're law-abiding citizens, and it's not these people you should be worried about. I personally am worried more about the gun owners who are not following the law, the bad guys out there, the unbalanced ones who are out there to do us harm, who have not gone through this process of trying to get a CHL. They don't have to worry about their personal information being exposed because someone filed a public records request. In fact, if you look at the public records law, there is an exemption in the public records law protecting some information about these very same criminals. It's time to change the law.
Before we go on to the next bill, any of the members have any questions? Okay, thank you. Go on to the next one.
All right. House Bill 2792 is pretty simple. It's just a matter of recognizing the permits, the concealed handgun licenses from other states here in Oregon. A person's Second Amendment rights shouldn't stop at the border. They shouldn't simply be turned into a criminal because they crossed a line. There is a patchwork of state laws, and I think they're coming now having unintended consequences, like making someone a criminal, especially those who travel across the country for work or those who like to visit this state on vacation. I have one constituent from Kaiser who is now on business in Florida, and he reported that he can't carry concealed in Florida simply because we don't recognize their concealed carry. And if we did, he would be able to carry. Oregon doesn't recognize permit holders from Florida, so Florida doesn't recognize permit holders from Oregon. This legislation would be good for travelers coming to the state as well as people traveling outside the state. Just for your information, we're one of only seven states that doesn't have any recognition of any other CHL. And I know this has come up before, but I think it's time we also do the right thing in this respect. Thanks.
Any questions on this one? Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Thank you for presenting this bill to our committee today, Representative. So tell us a little bit about what other states require in terms of information. You were telling us about the wealth of information that is required here, cell phone numbers, et cetera, et cetera. So what do other states require?
I'm sure they would vary along the same lines, but the thing is, people are able to drive here from other states as well, and we don't know what their requirements for getting a driver's license. There's no uniform. I mean, it's up to the states to do that. It's just a matter of recognizing that a state has a concealed handgun license program, and that I'm sure they want to keep their citizens safe, and they have laws there that would be just as good for people here as it would be for a licensed driver from Iowa driving in the state.
Mr. Chair, if I may, if anyone in the audience does have that information, I would be very happy to see it or hear it. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thatcher, in the past it seems like the Sheriff's Association has been a little hesitant to be in favor of the reciprocal recognition of other states, mainly because of some of the conversation I've had with sheriffs in the past, that there are some sheriffs outside of this jurisdiction for this state that do not go into the depth of background investigation as what we do here in Oregon. And I honestly do believe that the sheriffs in this state do an outstanding job with that. I'm just curious your thoughts along that line.
Well, I guess it would be kind of a continuation of my answer to Representative Tomei earlier, that we don't know all the requirements and education requirements for even a teen driver from another state coming over to our state and driving. It would not be against the law for them to drive here, yet they could be just as dangerous as, you know, anybody else with a car. And we either believe that the sheriffs in other jurisdictions are ones who want to watch out and make sure that law-abiding and good, you know, stable individuals are getting these concealed handgun licenses, or we're not going to trust the sheriffs from other jurisdictions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go ahead and leave the public hearing open on both, but we're going to go ahead and do 2787 first. We'll be calling people up. I'm not certain which of you have come together. I want to get the sheriffs up together later. But let's start out with Steve Wick. I think Wayne Stonecipher. Let's get the two of them up first, and we'll go on down the list. Please state your names and then your position.
My name is Steve Wick. I'm a Oregon resident and a resident of Yamhill County. My position is that I favor these two bills. I originally applied for a concealed weapons permit when I found out it was illegal to throw my shotgun or rifle on the back of my pickup and have it partially covered. Subsequently, I wanted to get a permit to carry a handgun when my wife and I took our horses up into the mountains. To get that permit, I found out that I had to pass a course. My wife and I both took the course. We took a hands-on course. Then I found out I had to submit that data showing that I had passed the course. I had to submit that to my local sheriff.
Then I found out he had to investigate.
That didn't bother me. Subsequently, every few years when I want to renew that permit, I have to march right down to the sheriff's office, and he checks me out again to make sure that I'm suitable. And I think I'd like to keep that conversation between the sheriff and me, between the sheriff and me. I don't see any value in opening up that data. I don't see how it's going to help anybody or help the state in any way. Thank you for hearing me today.
Okay.
My name is Wayne Stonecipher. I live in Yamhill County. Representative Thatcher pretty much stated my reasons for advocating positive positions on both of these laws, and I won't take any more of your time to discuss my reasons, but other than I think that my state government ought to be an advocate of my privacy and not the reverse.
Just a second.
Shawford, do you have a question?
Well, you can see they're in the building for a reason today other than this hearing. I just want to tell them both I'm glad we agree on something today.
I was going to make a comment about that, but I reframed. Oh, gosh. Okay. Can we have all the sheriffs come up at one time? Can we do that?
And the same thing. State your names for us, and then go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is, my name is Glenn Palmer, and I'm the sheriff from Grant County, Oregon. And I'm here to represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, which endorses House Bill 2787.
Over the last few years,
the Oregon sheriffs have been in a dilemma with requests for the release of public information. And it's ended up in the courtroom at several of our counties here in Oregon. And we're looking for some clarification and change of the law. And what's happening is personal information that's being released is putting our citizens that we're supposed to protect at risk. It jeopardizes their finances, their livelihoods, with the information being released to the public. What those people will do with the information is a concern to the sheriffs across Oregon. The majority of the sheriffs across Oregon have pulled their concealed handgun license holders, and about 95% of the concealed handgun license holders have responded, and they've asked the sheriffs to maintain that this information not be released to the public. I have submitted some written testimony to go further. To be honest with you, Representative Thatcher actually took my speech, so I'm gonna leave it at that. And I think I'll wait until the other two gentlemen speak, if that's okay, Mr. Chair, and then I'll talk about House Bill 2792.
Okay, we'll get to that one next. Okay. After I'll probably have you, you guys, if you can remain here, we'll finish this hearing, I'll open one on the other one, or continue it then, okay, rather than mix the two of them.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Co-chairs Barker and Krieger, members of the committee, I'm Sergeant Bob Grantham of the Jackson County Sheriff's Office. I'm testifying today on House Bill 2787 on behalf of the Jackson County Sheriff's Office and Sheriff Michael Minners. He could not attend today because of a prior commitment which could not be rescheduled. In late 2007, Sheriff Winters received a request for the release of all concealed handgun licenses issued in 2006 and 2007. He denied the request as exempt from disclosure under Oregon Revised Statutes 192.501, paragraph 23, the security measures exemption. There was judicial review by Judge G. Philip Arnold, who ruled that Sheriff Winters had failed to prove an individualized basis for exemption. The Oregon Court of Appeals affirmed that ruling in December of 2009. On November the 21st of 2008, Sheriff Winters had sent each of the affected 5,346 concealed handgun license holders a questionnaire asking for a yes or no response to the following statements. I want my concealed handgun license information to be kept confidential and do not want it released to the public. And I applied for a concealed handgun license as a personal safety measure, and I do not want any information about my application or license released to the public. There were 3,626 responses received, and 3,624, or 99.9%, answered yes to both statements. During that same time period, there were literally hundreds of letters and telephone calls and citizens coming into the sheriff's office supporting the sheriff's position. I know of only one telephone call that supported the position of the Mail Tribune. On January the 1st, 2009, we began including a confidentiality request with our concealed handgun license applications, asking for a yes or no response to those same two questions. Of the 4,870 applications received through February 4th of this year, 4,802, or 98.6%, have responded yes to both questions. The public records law is broad and ambiguous. Requiring an individualized basis for exemption is cumbersome at best. There are a number of state and federal laws that bar disclosure that do not have such a requirement. These laws would include non-disclosure for victims of domestic violence, non-disclosure of public employee identification information, non-disclosure of Social Security numbers, non-disclosure of student record information, and non-disclosure of personal information from the Department of Motor Vehicles. We strongly urge you to support House Bill 2787 and move the bill out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you on this bill. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Good afternoon. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here to talk about House Bill 2787. My name is David Hepp. I'm the undersheriff with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Rob Gordon would have been here today, but he had another commitment and could not make it. It is our belief at the Sheriff's Office that the 13,122 citizens in Washington County who possess concealed handgun licenses do not want their personal identity information released. In 2008, we first asked all of our current license holders, and since then, we have included it in our applications as well, in two statements that everybody reviewed, asking them to respond either in the affirmative or the negative to the statement. And the two statements are very similar to what was just reported. I want my concealed handgun license information to be kept confidential and to be protected from release to the public. And the other statement was, I applied for a concealed handgun license as a personal safety measure, and I want all information about my application or license protected from release to the public. Now, of those 13,122 license holders, only 24 have answered no to those statements. That's 0.2%. Almost all have requested confidentiality of their personal information and that they have applied for the CHL as a personal protective measure. From discussions with other sheriffs across the state, we believe that this level of opinion is typical for the approximate 130,000 license holders throughout the state. We at the Sheriff's Office also agree with others that release of this public information does not enhance public safety. We should remember that CHL holders are a very law-abiding group of citizens. They complete applications, they're fingerprinted, they go through a background check, they complete firearm safety classes, and they pay a fee to comply with the law. Now, release of the CHL personal information does raise concerns. Personal information, as already testified to, would be available to others and could be used against the holders of those CHL licenses. The lists could be used for business purposes in the sense of using the names to send propaganda mail, information for sales, marketing, and so on, group catalog mailing. And we also know that that it would be a known or probable known source of addresses where firearms are believed to be kept. And we also believe that it would be available to those people with criminal intent who would go and commit burglaries or thefts at those residents. We do have a concern with the current language in one section of the bill. That would be Section 1, Subsection 2. We believe that the intent addresses a valid need, but it may be too vague in that it does not define what records or information may be ordered released. It would seem more reasonable to only be records or information relevant to the pending civil or criminal case before the court of record. And the current language in the bill may not cover it completely at that point. So we at the Washington County Sheriff's Office, along with others, do support House Bill 2787 and the increased ability to protect personal identity information of concealed handgun permit holders. Thank you very much.
Might be interesting. Now, if I was going to be a burglar, I'd want that list so I could go to the house that didn't have the guns. The committee, you have any questions? Representative Garrett?
Could you say more about your final point, the ambiguity? Did you say it was your... would you just restate what you believe that, in your view, the bill should say?
Well, as written in Section 1, Subsection 2, it states, a court enters an order in a pending civil or criminal case directing the public body to disclose the records or information. In addition, something similar to disclose the records or information involved in the civil or criminal case before the court. At legal counsel at Washington County has suggested that a judge could order release of information not pertinent to the case at hand before the court, but could make a broader order releasing more than just that is the issue. And I don't know if that was detailed enough.
Shouldn't a judge, shouldn't a court be empowered to order the release of information if necessary in a case? It sounds like you're asking for a tighter restriction than what the bill is calling for. I mean, typically in what I've seen in similar situations is if there's if information is to be kept confidential, then there's a kind of blanket exception that's phrased something like, except as may be ordered by a judicial process. Are you suggesting that would not be an appropriate phrasing here? You're asking for something more limited?
I would ask consideration of that, yes, that it would be more limited to include the case at hand. The case before the court, whether it's a civil or criminal case, not release of information that wasn't specifically pertinent to that case. And I could provide additional written information to further clarify that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any further? Representative Hicks.
Thank you, and I do see our legislative council is present, and perhaps our committee would ask for some investigation of that matter, but I'm not as concerned about it because typically I would think certainly in a criminal case and potentially I think in the civil realm, such records would be ordered by the court pursuant to subpoena ducis tecum, which is limited to evidence relevant to the matter at hand, proceeding matter. So I don't know that if legislative council would have considered that, but I'm not personally bothered by it. I can understand where your counsel would have pointed that out, but I think that the way a court would be able to get it would be limited through the normal processes of dealing with what information was relevant. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Sheriff. One of the concerns I have when just talking about this, there are some people who are able to keep their personal information out of public pretty much. They can register their driver's license at work and so on, police officers, district attorneys, deputy district attorneys. Some of those people deal with the worst of the worst. And so they try to keep that confidential. So if this is public record, then why couldn't the criminal or friend of the criminal, the friend of the murderer, come down to the sheriff's office and say, I'd like to know where, or I'd like to see if Jeff Barker has a permit, and then you get to take a look at that. And then they know where I live and so on, and endanger my family, my children, and on and on. So would that not be also be a major issue along these lines where on the concealed weapons permit, I have to tell you truthfully where I live, where I can have my driver's license and say the police station or something. Would that not be a problem? I would assume you have to tell that I have to have my real address on there. I can't say the police station. Although I realize police officers don't have to have concealed weapons permits, but it is an example.
Correct. Representative Barker, on that question, there are some exemptions in the statutes that I believe that, such as one of the examples that comes to mind right off the bat is
police officers can have
their mail delivered to their place of employment. They can have their driver's license listed as their place of employment just for those protections to keep bad guys from finding out where they live and those kind of issues.
But so then, like a police officer wouldn't have a use for a concealed weapons permit because they can carry already, but if
correct.
They were in some other criteria that's allowed to do that, deputy district attorneys, for example, would they have to give their true address when they made a CHL application?
I believe on the face of
the application, it would have to be true and accurate.
Thank you.
To pass the muster of the application.
Okay, thank
yes.
you very much. Okay, anything further? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. We've been informed that they're broadcasting this in the Senate lobby and that we are over the fire marshal's allowed number of people in the room. I can't imagine that. So some of you who are standing, and exactly what the number is, do we have the exact number? Representative Tomei is going to run you out the way it appears.
Well, I know some of my constituents are here in these lovely green shirts, so I'm going to step outside with them, so I'll eliminate some of the people that are over 50.
Okay.
Yeah,
if you're not on the list to testify, you probably need to step out if you're not seated, with the exception of the sheriffs, and then we'll call you back in a little bit. I'm going to call up one person here, Rochelle Lucas. You want to come up, please?
Subject to this issue. Sure. Customers' money for federal forest management contracts should be used to employ.
That's yeah, great. This is a specific body of labor, right?
Yes, it's the common labor 18.
I came to testify today because I'm a sexual assault victim, and it's very difficult for me to come forward.
Can you state your name for us, please?
I'm sorry, my name is. And I want to speak. It's hard for me, but I want to speak on behalf of other sexual assault victims who cannot come forward, because even thinking about having our private information put out in public reopens that wound. And it doesn't matter how long it's been since that incident occurred, it feels as though you're being re-violated again to even think about it. And I did prepare some things today, and I will let you know what they are. Because the other points I want to make is, it's really, when that happened to me, the media was very careful. They reported in the media, they were very, very careful to protect my privacy. And it seems a little odd now that they're trying to reveal my privacy when I try to protect myself by having a CHL. Even the county brought charges against the perpetrator instead of doing it in my name to protect my privacy. All people seem to innately understand that when you've been violated, that it's as if your skin is broken, and people can get inside of you in a way that they shouldn't naturally. And this reopens those wounds, even again, the thought of it. But on the other hand, I've been scared all my life because of this. I felt vulnerable. The scars really, really never do go away. It's as if you have a room in your house where a child died. And most of the time, you keep that room with the teddy bears and the bed made and everything like that. Most of the time in your life, you go around and you're happy. You're cooking in your kitchen. You're hanging out in your den, watching TV. But every once in a while, you have to go into that room and you see the teddy bears again. And you see the bedspread made. Only in this case, you see violence, and you feel fear, and you think you're going to die. So there's just no way around it, which is why you won't hear personally from very many victims, or they try to tell you from a place where they're still in their den or their kitchen cooking, because they feel safe. One of the things that's helped me recover, oddly enough, was going forth and getting my CHL, because that there's a part of you when that happens to you that feels like, how did you let me down? You know, I wasn't able to protect myself from harm, but now I can. And that part of me feels stood up for. Even if I never ever use, and God help me, I hope I never do, that weapon, I feel like I'm walking around vindicating that part of me, because I'm willing to protect myself in a way where I left myself vulnerable. You know, my body is the temple of God, and I wasn't protecting it. I was off duty. And as I said, having my private information made public, it actually re-violates me, and it takes away safety that I expected my government to provide for me. Never in my wildest dreams, when I filled out all those forms to get my legal CHL, did I believe that my government and my media that once protected me in court and in the media, in the paper, would actually seek to take that away once I became a CHL holder. It's ironic, too, because in other bills, right now the Oregon legislature fights to protect the privacy of sexual assault victims. And right now we're looking at one more of those bills that would actually do that. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I ask you to consider keeping all records private for sexual assault victims, for crime victims, and for regular citizens that have lawfully sought to get a license. And we expect our government to protect those records. Thank you.
Okay.
We very much appreciate the fact that you've come forward, because as you say, you probably do represent a lot of victims who just, they can't do it. So we very much appreciate that. Committee members, do any of you have any questions? Thank you very much. Tom Gallagher.
Chairs, members of the committee. My name is Tom Gallagher, representing the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. I expect I will be in front of this committee a number of times this session on public records. On these two particular bills I have in front of you, it is our position that the openness of public records is extraordinarily important in Oregon, except in cases where there is a significant public need to create a specific exemption. While we support the openness of public records, we leave it to the judgment of this committee as to whether there is a need to make an exemption in this case. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you had.
Any questions, anybody? I'm going to ask you the question.
Thank you.
What was your position 2 years ago?
To the best of my recollection, Co-Chair Krieger, the position of a number of newspapers testified against the bill, and that the Newspaper Association itself did not testify, that Open Oregon testified against the bill. I know that I did not testify, to the best of my recollection, but I remember the room.
I'm glad you're coming out.
Often educated you.
Thank you very much, Tom. Is it Penny Camato? I don't know how you pronounce the last name. You can correct it for us when you get up here.
It is Penny Okamoto. It is of Japanese descent. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2787, which would close public access to the names of the concealed handgun license holders. I am the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon, and there are a couple things we need to make clear, I think, right off the bat. One thing is that this bill would actually just make the names available. We're not talking about Social Security numbers. As far as I know, we're not talking about addresses, anything else. If that is in the law, I am not aware of that. This would just be names. Ceasefire Oregon opposes House Bill 2787, and our opposition is based on the Oregon Public Records Law, the security need for Oregonians to know if a particular individual has a concealed weapon, and the fact that no harm has come from keeping these records open, but harm has come from people carrying concealed weapons. I'll address these points individually. In June of 2010, the Oregon Court of Appeals ruled in Mail Tribune v. Winter that concealed handgun licenses are public records. There has been no additional or new reasoning since that time that has been presented to demonstrate a need to perform this end run around the Oregon Court of Appeals. To balance the concealed carry privilege, Oregon has given the public the right to know who has been granted a concealed handgun license. Oregon already has over 100,000 concealed handgun license holders. Oregonians have a right to know if the state has provided a privilege of concealment to a coworker, a neighbor, or someone who will be working with a family. A supervisor has a right to know if a disgruntled employee has a concealed handgun license. The privilege of carrying a concealed weapon in society must be balanced with the right to know if the person sitting at the desk across from you has a weapon hidden under his jacket. I would like to say that we would be very willing to make an exception for victims of sexual assault crimes to keep their names a secret. So harm does come from people who carry concealed weapons, and I have attached a list. I'm sorry, I forgot to give you the information. I'll get that to you. I actually have attached a list of some of the shootings in which concealed weapons permit holders actually were at fault. Sadly, it's a rather extensive list. And even from the Violence Policy Center, we know that across the United States, since 2007, 282 people these are just the ones that we can track down from the information that we can get, have been killed by concealed handgun permit holders. That includes 9 law enforcement officers who've been killed by people with concealed handgun permit holders. I'm not saying that these people are bad people. I'm saying that when you get over 100,000 people just in the state of Oregon with concealed carry weapon permits, you're going to have a few bad apples. And people have the right to know that. This legislation does not affect the right to bear arms, but rather the right of the public to continue to have the access it has had for years to view the records of privileges granted by the state to carry a concealed weapon. A concealed handgun license is a privilege, not a right, granted by a constitution. Closing the concealed handgun license records does not keep Oregonians safer. It keeps us in the dark, wondering who has a hidden gun. Please vote no on 2787. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Ms. Kokomoto, for your testimony, for coming today. So, I just lost my question. Oh, golly, my senior moment, everybody.
Yeah, but you're looking good.
And it's on TV,
at the
so
moment,
I'm
not helping. Am I on television? Thanks a lot. Oh, you said only names were available.
That's what I understand it, only refers to names.
Okay, so if somebody in the audience could give us that information, if it's only the names or if it is actually that whole sheath of information.
We'll bring that forward. We've got some people to be testifying to that.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for my senior moment.
Representative Barker.
Just only one brief comment I'd say. I don't know that we're doing an end run around the Court of Appeals. We frequently create legislation when there's court decisions that don't seem, you know, to match what we feel should be moved forward. And that goes from all different angles. So I don't know that this is an end run. It's trying to correct what we feel, or what at least I feel, is an error, or at least we need to clarify for the courts. The courts have come here and said you need to have spoken or written in very good words so that we can understand it. If it's not, we go by the words, not because we don't know your intent, and so that's what we're trying to clarify, some of the intent.
Okay, further? Representative Wand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just dovetail on Co-Chair Barker, and in fact, the Court of Appeals was interpreting a statute drafted by the legislature. So, de facto, it can't be an end run around the Court of Appeals because it originated with us in the first place, and they were interpreting something that the legislature passed and the governor signed, which means that we now have the opportunity, in light of how they ruled about our original language, to make a determination as to whether that's what we wanted them to do in light of the public policy considerations. But thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Dave, is it Dave Simmons?
Yes.
Simon? Yeah, can you come up, please?
Thank you for the opportunity, Representative Krieger, members of the committee. I'm here to testify in favor, actually, of both of these bills. I'll comment on the records bill. Basically, this is the result of a fishing expedition.
Yeah, can you identify yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Dave Simmons.
Sorry.
This debate is the result of a fishing expedition by several newspapers. I don't see why that is a legitimate reason to go after people's records in the first place. The fact that it's possible should be proof enough that something of this sort is needed to protect people.
Representative Barker mentioned that law enforcement, in fact, are even afraid of giving their home addresses to the Department of Motor Vehicles. I assure you there are some of us common, ordinary little people out here that are afraid of that for the same reason. It doesn't take much to anger somebody nowadays to the point where they'll try to track you down. So this is really what you're looking at. I guess you'd call it a no-brainer. However, I'd like to expand on this just a little bit. I really think that all of this record keeping on ordinary law-abiding citizens is a waste of money. I understand there's a bill being offered to eliminate the concealed weapons licensing entirely, as has happened in Alaska and Arizona recently, and for that matter, the firearms record keeping. The problem that we have and the problem that we're seeing is with literally crazy people getting their hands on firearms, and we're not identifying them. In the recent case in Arizona, there were numerous opportunities, but no legal mechanism, apparently, to get this individual incarcerated or committed. And I note that in California, the same thing happened with Patrick Purdy, who shot up a schoolyard and killed 35 children. California's response was to enact an assault rifle ban. Now, recently, I heard an Israeli criticizing our TSA and our screening system at the airports because, as he put it, we're looking for things and not people. And it struck me that that is exactly the situation that we have with concealed weapons licensing and firearm screening in general. We're not, we're focused on firearms and we're focused on ordinary law-abiding people, when in fact what we should be looking for is a way to identify the criminal psychopaths and paranoid schizophrenics and some of the other such individuals among us and get them out of circulation. Now, with that, realizing I've digressed some, I'd be happy to answer any questions I'm capable of answering, which is always in doubt.
All right. Committee members, do you have any questions? Okay, thank you for your testimony. Dan Norris, please.
I'm Dan Norris, the district attorney in Malheur County, speaking on behalf of ODAA. Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, ODAA does support this bill. And Chair Barker, your concerns about my deputies with concealed weapons permits is a valid concern. They can't get my deputy's address from their license. They can't get it from the tax records, but I believe they could get the application my deputies submitted. And so that would be a concern. We do have one, hopefully, improvement to the bill, which is the criminal justice purpose exception. We like the fact that we can get them for criminal prosecution. Our concern is it's too broad because you don't define who can get it for a criminal justice purpose. Okay. So ODAA's suggestion is that you modify that phrase with this language: the attorney general, a district attorney, or a law enforcement agency may obtain the records for a criminal justice purpose.
Okay, any questions? Thank you very much.
Chair,
go ahead.
Just thank you. Deanna, just really quick, you heard the testimony that was mentioned from the sheriffs earlier when they were up here about the subsection 2 for the court enters an order impending civil. Could you share your thoughts on that piece with us?
I believe that the court would put the limitations that I'm not sure if it was Representative Wand or Representative Garrett put in, excuse me, co-chairs and Representative Olson. I need to mind my manners here. I believe that a court would probably insert that limitation in any event. I don't know if it does any harm, but I don't know if it would do that much to change the substance of the way a court would interpret it.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up.
Sure. What would your feelings be if, under that portion of the court order, there was a burden of proof placed clear and convincing?
Co-chair Barker, Representative, or co-chair Krieger, Representative Olson. I'm out of my league answering that question. I've done 20-something years of criminal work and haven't done a civil case in years.
Thank you.
Okay. Wand?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, actually, a clear and convincing standard is the highest standard of proof in the court. Basically, the jury has to be absolutely convinced. I do share a little bit of concern from one of the witnesses about the court entering an order. And the reason why I share a little bit of concern is that when you're talking about a subpoena or discovery devices in a civil case, the standard is whether the information sought could reasonably be expected to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence. So in other words, it's not that what you're seeking would be admissible in court or would be proper evidence in court. It's that what you're seeking might eventually get there to something that's admissible. And so, having gone through several motions to quash subpoenas during the course of my career, I can tell you that the judges are very reluctant to quash a subpoena, and they're far more favorable towards ensuring that proper discovery is had and casting a very wide net to gather more information. My thought on that would be that maybe what we do if we consider such a change is suggest that a court review such documentation in camera as opposed to allowing it to be disclosed to the public at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything further?
Mr. Co-Chair. If I might, I'd appreciate your help in understanding the distinctions that I think you're trying to make between the legitimate interests of a member of your department or a member of law enforcement and a private citizen in access to the information contained in these records. If I understand it correctly, you suggested that your employees, your colleagues, would be concerned about personal safety and therefore might need access to this information. The part I'm having a hard time understanding is why that same concern for personal safety might not apply to a former partner of someone who has a restraining order against someone and wants to know if that person has a concealed handgun permit, or a coworker or neighbor of someone who's concerned about their safety and wants to know if their neighbor or their coworker has access to this. Can you draw that distinction for me, please?
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, and Representative Nolan, I believe that is a legitimate balancing that this committee is going to have to make in terms of what information and why. And I could see that someone might be concerned that a neighbor does, in fact, have a concealed weapons permit. And I obviously am not sitting in your chair, and that is a very valid balancing that this committee is going to have to make.
I certainly understand the point you're making. Law enforcement officers stop someone on a deserted road and would like to be able to know when they approach that car whether possibly we're dealing with someone with a concealed weapon. What I'm having a hard time with is whether someone who is going home alone and has a restraining order against someone and sees their car parked a half a block down from their home, whether they should also be able to know that information so that they can keep themselves safe.
Co-Chair Barker, Representative Krieger, and Representative Nolan, unfortunately, if I have a victim and that car is a half a mile down the road, whether it's a concealed weapons permit or not, that victim better be ready for the fact that that person may be armed.
A fair point, Mr. Co-Chair, but your law enforcement officer is much more prepared to deal with that situation than a regular citizen.
And Representative, I don't want to debate it. The law enforcement would still have access to this and it would still come out over the radio. But if I'm pulled over, for instance, that officer who pulled me over and gave me a $242 ticket the other day, he knew that I had a concealed weapons permit when he approached my car. That is not the public record issue.
Okay, thank you. I might add, Representative Nolan, that when I walked up to a car and I knew it was a concealed carry, I was much more at ease because I knew the background check of those people. It was a car I walked up to that might have that gun in it, and I just didn't know what their objective was. Were the ones that really made me most suspicious. And I don't think there's, in fact, the number of people that are killed by numbers of police officers are game enforcement officers, believe it or not. Because we deal with people out in the brush in the woods, and they are always armed. So we always went underneath the assumption that they did have a gun, and we're very, very careful how we approached them.
Representative,
You got another gentleman?
One quick. All right. One quick point to return to.
Have to move on here. Okay. Pretty quick. We'll never get the other bill done.
Okay. This is actually for our last witness before he departed the scene. But in regards to, I just wanted you to point out briefly, in case anyone is going to be concerned, in regards to paragraph 2, a court enters an order in a pending civil or criminal case directing the public body to disclose the records or information, because this has been returned. I think Representative Juan hit the point amply in regards to the civil case, and I just wanted to confirm with you in regards to criminal cases that defense attorneys are under, I think, a statutory and ethical prohibition from revealing personal contact information of victims to their client, to their defendants. Is that right?
Co-Chair Barker, Representative Krieger. Under certain circumstances, the defense counsel may not disclose some information, including the personal information of how to find the victim.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. John Powell?
Chairman, I defer to the sheriffs that are here.
You're going to take their word for it? All right, thank you. Thank you.
At the end.
I want to have, now,
who's the other?
Was there someone else? I got two other people I want to have that testify last, but is there someone else that wanted to testify that didn't sign up?
Yes.
Okay. Any of you who have not signed up that do want to testify, come on up now if there's not more than three of you. And then I'll call the last two when we're done.
Thank you. David Piles, David J. Piles, resident in Medford, Oregon. I've submitted written testimony. I was not prepared to provide oral testimony, but I've been motivated based on some of the comments I've heard here today. First, respectfully addressing, I believe Representative Olson's comments, I believe made in a positive light regarding the sheriff's support for 2787 concerning background checks. I think I understand the intent of what your comment was and the support. I certainly support law enforcement and the three sheriff's representatives that were here today. I support their position on 2787. I would just caution, though, and this is motivated by the young lady that spoke regarding assault. When she spoke about violation of a physical nature, and when she spoke about getting in under someone's skin and something from the outside coming in, I just want to remind the Judiciary Committee respectfully that violations are not always physical. If you're familiar with my case, and in conclusion, I'll be very brief. If you're familiar with my case, David Piles, from March 8, 2010, in Jackson County, Oregon,
I would simply call your attention and I would ask for incorporation of my prior comments,
which are public record, made for the proposed administrative rule proposed by the Oregon State Police regarding fixed background checks, the federal firearms checks. Ultimately, these are firearms background checks we're talking about. Were I a concealed carry permit holder, I certainly would want my privacy respected for the basic right, just basic privacy, individual privacy. Because when someone gets under your inside, it's not just by physical violation. It can be well other means that are non-physical. And they can be very violent. You know, they can violate one very much. So I would just simply ask that the Judiciary Committee incorporate my written comments made to the State Police for the proposed administrative rule in addition to the written comments that I submitted to this body today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Can you state your name and give us your testimony?
Yes. My name is John Allen. I am an officer at the Moala Rifle Club, Moala, Oregon. I wanted to make a specific comment to do with former law enforcement officers who are not retired law enforcement officers who, like myself, have a concealed handgun license. The publication of that information, depending on what information is publishable. What the courts ultimately decide is publishable. Would make my name, possibly my address, available to people that I used to deal with.
As a matter of
my profession there as a correctional officer. And I wouldn't care to have those people coming to my home to settle some score that they felt they needed to settle. Certainly, current law enforcement officers, and as I understand it, retired law enforcement officers, have a commission to carry a concealed weapon without the concealed handgun license. But in the case of people like myself who did not retire from law enforcement, we have to gain a handgun license. Finally, I hope it won't offend too many people to say that this bill is necessary because of the attempts of various members of the news media to gain this information. I think it would be easily
demonstrable that
these are people who generally tend to fall to the liberal side of the political spectrum and are not particularly in favor of Second Amendment decisions that are being currently handed down by the courts, particularly the Supreme Court, or for individuals to own guns, much less carry them in a concealed manner. And by requiring having courts decide that this kind of information, depending on how much of it is releasable, be released to the public, they would therefore discourage people from getting a concealed handgun license. And I believe this is the primary purpose behind this sort of thing. I think that should be taken into effect and, I mean, into consideration. And also, the judgment that is sometimes used by these very same media people. I happened to be working at Rocky Butte Jail in 1982 or 83 when we had a jailbreak there, and an officer was shot in the head. And the very next morning, on the front page of the Oregonian, his home address was printed. I thought that showed an incredible lack of judgment on the part of the biggest newspaper in the country. And everybody associated with that organization should have lost their job, as far as I was concerned.
Okay, well, thank you for your testimony. We're going to have to move along. We're not going to make it. Kevin Sterrick and Rod Harder, please, to finish up.
Mr. Chair, Chair Krieger, Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. I'm the Oregon consultant for the National Rifle Association. My testimony will be very brief. NRA is very much in favor of this bill, as we have been the last four or five times it's been heard. I want to address one of Representative Nolan's concerns. I think if your next-door neighbor knew that you went through a background check, were fingerprinted, photographed, had no criminal record, that they might be more feel more safe than he would with someone living next door they knew nothing about. With regards to the application itself, in fact, it does have a place for Social Security numbers, and that's voluntary at the moment. So I did want to comment briefly on Far Oregon's statement that 282 people were killed by concealed handgun license holders. What was not said, and I don't know the answer, but I would speculate that a large majority of those were in self-defense. I think if we look at those statistics, we ought to get right down to the nitty-gritty and figure out what they're all about. With that, I'll close and let Mr. Sterrett, unless there are some other questions.
Members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I'd like to address some of the things that have been said previously. The suggestion that only names will be released is absolutely not correct. In fact, in the past, the recent past, several sheriff's departments have released all of this information, and as was pointed out by one of the sheriffs, it is currently being used in direct mail marketing pitches, and the people who got that information are now free to sell that to whoever they want. And I know that because not only was I the recipient of this direct mail pitch, and everybody knows what I do, but several female family members of mine who people don't know what they do were receiving the same pitch as well. So more than names are being given out. The question here is, are these appropriate government records to be shared any more than your tax records are? That information is taken from you whether you want to provide it or not, but we don't share that information. And these are not records of government activity, as Representative Thatcher pointed out. These are records of private information that you must provide or you cannot exercise what we consider to be a right. Now, the concern about knowing that someone has a gun has nothing to do with this legislation, because, in fact, there are many people who have concealed handgun licenses who don't own guns. And there are people, many, many people who own guns who don't have concealed handgun licenses. And if you're concerned about your crazy neighbor down the street, I can assure you that that person will never harm you with their license. They can only hurt you with their hands or a weapon. And the fact is that we don't disclose information about firearms purchases. I should qualify that. We're not supposed to disclose information about firearms purchases, but the Oregon State Police have, in fact, done that in violation of their own rules, and we have today a victim of that violation. So if you're really concerned about your neighbor having a gun, you're not going to get the information you need by tracking the private information of their CHL. Fact is that this became an issue as a result of the Medford Mail Tribune's attempt to out and embarrass teachers in their district. And they made that perfectly clear that that's what their efforts were. The paper has an anti-gun bias, which we can demonstrate by numerous editorials. And there are people in lines of work in this country, in this state, which I pointed out the last time we heard this bill, they work in businesses that are just inherently hostile to gun ownership. And I'd be glad to name some of those businesses, although it's been misinterpreted in the past. But why should a person fear retribution from their coworkers or bosses, as did the Medford teacher, simply because they did something that was their legal right to do and should not have been disclosed? That being said, I would just like to make it clear that we're very supportive of this legislation and request that you pass it.
Representative Garrett. Sterrett and Garrett. All right. Garrett wants to ask Sterrett a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're not related. Two questions for either or both of you. I voted for a version of this bill 2 years ago, 2727, and it differed in a couple ways from the bill that's before us. One, that bill was written so as to basically add another exemption to the existing public records statute, and I think that the current bill is structured differently, so I would ask if that's right and if you could comment on why that is. Second, the bill 2 years ago had a provision saying that the exemption does not apply if a person could show by clear and convincing evidence that the public interest requires disclosure in that instance. That strikes me as an important safety valve that we arrived at 2 years ago that's not present in the existing language. And I wonder if you could also comment on that, please.
Well, Co-Chairs and Representative Garrett, I think I'd like to see the same standard applied if I have some clear and convincing reason to know how much money you made last year and what you paid in taxes. I should have access to that information as well. As far as the way the bill is structured, I will tell you, having gone through this last session and read as much as I could about the private record statutes that we have, they are amongst the most confusing I have ever seen. And I can't speak to why Representative Thatcher structured her bill exactly the way she did, except that for me, trying to understand this seems like the most understandable, least complicated way to approach it.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, Representative Garrett, we started that bill last year. It did not have clear and convincing evidence in it. We had a good friend on the committee that added a number of things to that bill and contributed to its ultimate demise. But I think this bill is much simpler, and it does, in fact, keep it out of the public records law, I think, and that would be our hope.
Anything further?
Chairman, may I just make one final comment?
Yes.
There was a concern expressed by Representative Nolan about a police officer approaching a car. Now, I don't know why this would change anything, but I think
all of you have been police officers
know, as do I, that the very first thing your dispatcher informs you of when you identify someone in a car stop is whether or not they have a valid CHL.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a second. Let's start. Let me close this bill out. I'll close the hearing on 2787 and then open on 2792 and let you do that, the two of you do that bill now. Also, the rest of you are going to testify. If you've got written testimony, get it to us. Don't read basically what you've got, because we will not be able to finish if we continue to lag with too much time.
Chair Walker, Chair Krieger, I'm Rod Harder with the National Rifle Association. My testimony on this will be very brief because there are a number of folks that are going to testify after us and say basically the same thing. To answer some of Representative Tomei's questions that I would anticipate are going to come, we have found over the years that people with licenses, regardless of what the criteria for getting them is, if they took the trouble to get a license and go through the hoops that they have to go through, they're not a problem. Occasionally, there will be a problem. There's no question about that. Occasionally, somebody is going to do something they shouldn't do. We know that. But by and large, concealed license holders from any state are not generally a problem. As far as criteria and the different criteria from different states, I can get some of that, but it's limited. And I want to tell you why we chose this bill to go forward, or why we support this bill to go forward, as opposed to the other bills that you'll be hearing, one with regards to whether people go through criminal background checks in other states, whether or not the criteria is the same as Oregon. We feel that this is a better bill because it has no fiscal impact. We had some of those bills we ran last session, and when the state police came in with the fiscal impact, it weighted the bills down so much that really they were difficult to justify. This bill has very, very limited fiscal impact. It is wide-ranging, yes, but it is fair. And to give you another, Representative Tomei, another instance is Utah is recognized in 30-plus states. Utah licenses are registered in 30-plus states. Their criteria for getting them is basically the same as Oregon. There are other states whose requirements are more stringent than Oregon. That is unquestionable. There are some states that don't have a license, won't issue a license. But we will recognize licenses from another state. And that's what we want to do. That's why we want this bill to go forward. It's the broadest ranging and the fairest. It would guarantee Oregon reciprocity with more states. And I guess I'm in a rut saying that concealed handgun license holders aren't a problem. One additional thing that was brought up before the hearing was that there was some concern about people from other states carrying their license. Oregon law is very specific, and these license holders would have to comply with Oregon law if you read the bill. You are required, we are required, to carry the time we have a firearm, as long as it's concealed. That applies to everybody, and it would apply to everyone from out of state if their license is in those states or another state required it. With that, I will close my testimony.
Once again, Kevin Starrick, Oregon Firearms Federation. This bill benefits Oregonians, as Mr. Harder pointed out, because there are many states that will only recognize our license when we recognize their license. It simplifies things because it recognizes every state's license, which means we're not putting police officers in a position of having to have a constant checklist of whose we do and do not recognize. Furthermore, as I think some people, if they have an opportunity, will testify, many people are eager to have licenses to carry in Oregon, and they are people who've demonstrated them to be of high character. It's very, very difficult for a non-resident to get an Oregon license, first of all, because you can only apply if you live in an adjoining state, but also you must find a sheriff who's willing to issue. And we do have sheriffs who are willing to issue, one of whom is here. But even in that case, the applicant has to travel to that sheriff's office, apply in person, and then travel back there every 4 years to renew. As you can see by the handout I've given you, we are one of very few states that doesn't recognize any other state's license. And I think it would be a positive thing if our sheriff had the opportunity to simply allow people who demonstrated that they're law-abiding to carry with their licenses rather than having to process the applications from non-residents, which I know the sheriffs who are issuing have a lot of work to do processing those, and they don't always have the resources. And while I thank them for their willingness to issue these licenses, I think they probably would prefer not to be required to have that workload.
Any questions?
I see the most able and prudent and reasonable people in the great state of Iowa have recognized every other state's permits. So how long have these states that recognize all the other states been doing this? And there must be a pretty substantial amount of data showing whether or not it's created a problem or a threat to the folks there in Iowa. So you have any response to that? And you don't have it with you, but there must be something out there.
Well, Representative Schauffele, I will tell you this. This is all I do, and I can tell you I have no evidence, no anecdotal evidence of any kind that there has been an issue anywhere.
I might add that last year when we checked on concealed carry crimes, we didn't find anything. That's why this testimony heard earlier today. I've emailed back, and I want to have, you know, if they're going to come in here and say there's 283 people been killed by concealed carry people, they better give me the names of the people, the jurisdiction it was in, and did they kill someone else illegally, or was it the concealed person protecting themselves? So they've been requested to do that. They'll have it when they get back. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Wow. Let me see. Let's get the sheriffs up here. Some of you have to travel. Any of you that do want to testify?
Am I the only one?
Yeah. You're okay. The only one. They let you. Hey, Powell's not even coming up. That's oh, here he comes.
I'll go ahead and begin. I'd like to thank you again for the opportunity to testify. Representative Krieger and Co-Chair Barker. My name is Glenn Palmer. I'm the sheriff for Grant County. Drove all the way over from John Day this morning and give my testimony on House Bill 2792. I endorse House Bill 2792. One of the things that Oregon is a shall issue state to residents. Oregon, however, is a may issue to the four contiguous states of Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and California. One of the things that I would like to see done is that we recognize and reciprocate the courtesy of allowing other people to come to Oregon, whether they have to travel through our state for business, recreation, or just when they come to Oregon. I think we need to step up to the table and recognize that they too have gone through some kind of an educational process and gone through fingerprinting, the background check, and that is where they would be licensed from the state that they reside in. One of the things I'd like to close with is I don't think that it matters whether you're a male or a female. It doesn't matter what color skin is, and it shouldn't matter what your national origin is. If you want to come to Oregon, you have the absolute right to defend yourself, and whether you carry a concealed weapon or carry it out in the open, I'm of the opinion it doesn't matter. They have the absolute right to defend themselves, and we shouldn't saddle them with not being able to do that or putting them in the position of a law enforcement officer, whether it be a city, county, or state officer, subjecting these people to arrest just merely for possessing a handgun or a concealed weapon of some kind, that they have no intention to use it against anybody unless it's in a self-defense mode. Again, I want to tell you I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you, and I guess I could take any questions if you have them.
Go ahead, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for coming, Sheriff Palmer. So you mentioned that all these states that give permits have an educational component with it. Can you just verify that for me and send the information to the staff and they can send it to the rest of us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tomei, I would be more than happy to gather some data and make it available to you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sheriff, what has been your experience? How long have you been a deputy, did you mention, or a sheriff?
I've been a police officer since February of 1985. I've been the elected sheriff of Grant County since I was appointed in November of 2000. I was elected in 2001.
Just briefly, what's been your experience with CHL holders that you knew in the area, or people you didn't know that you found out had them when you got them stopped? Has there been problems you've experienced at all, any type as a police officer?
No. We've actually recalled a couple of permits, and that's because people have been subjected to arrest. They've either been picked up for a DUI or a domestic violence, and those permits are taken away from them until the case is adjudicated. If they're adjudicated for misdemeanors, it'll be 4 years. At felonies, you're going to lose your right to bear arms. There's protocol in place. There's criteria that they have to wait, domestic violence, restraining orders, stalking orders, things like that. People are not eligible to apply for a CHL in Oregon under those. When I pull a car over, it's automatic, comes back from our dispatch that the subject that we're stopping on their driver's license is a concealed handgun license holder. It automatically pops up on the LED screen. I have no concerns whatsoever of any concealed handgun license holders that I've either issued to or I've come across in the 25 years I've been a policeman.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Yes,
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question about how the bill would work kind of mechanically. If a person came with a license from another state, how would we know what purported to be a valid license? How would we know if, for example, that license had been rescinded, or if the person had done something in their home state to forfeit the license? Is there a way to check that?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Garrett, I'm not sure how to answer the question. I think there's going to have to be some kind of mechanism in our law enforcement data system, and to where we have the ability to suspend driver's license across borders. We have the ability to suspend hunting licenses across borders. And I think that if we just communicate and share the information cross borders like we do now with driver's license and hunting privileges, I think that mechanism could be put in place. It wouldn't cost that much. One other thing that I would like to testify on, if it's okay, is that I think this is an unnecessary tax that's being put on the people that don't live in Oregon, that if they do choose to come here and visit, it's just another $50 fee and then a renewal of another $50 every 4 years to keep the permit valid. And I think if we started reciprocating permits from non-residents, that we'd also be able to maybe get the same courtesy when we travel to their states as well.
John, do you have
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Powell, representing Oregon's 36 county sheriffs. First, about John Day, it's a long ways. 1997 was my last trip there. But to tell you about the people and how easy the job this guy has, it was to play in a state baseball tournament. Of course, I wasn't playing. I had a child on the team, and went to breakfast the morning of the game, and I ordered oatmeal, but I asked if it had raisins, and they said yes. I said, could I get it without raisins? Yes. So when I went to pay, she said, I didn't charge you for your coffee because you didn't have raisins. And I said, where I come from, they charge you to take them out. And then the Grant team shellacked us in the baseball game. I mean, left us in the dust. Mr. Chairman, Oregon's sheriffs have spent a lot of time over the last few years on this issue. And we've really come to some sheriffs have come to the conclusion that maybe at some point we just do away with the CHL and keep the same standards in the law that law enforcement would, in fact, enforce. And that is, if you're a felon in possession of a firearm, you're violating the law. And if you obviously have one in the commission of crime, you're violating the law, and enforce it that way. I think we support reciprocity. simply because in practice it's almost that way now. And I think in the question that Mr. Garrett posed was a good one. But in real practice now, I think what most law enforcement officers do when they pull somebody over from out of state and they find out they have a CHL from their home state, they will tell them that technically you should put that firearm out in a visible place beyond your immediate reach. In other words, they're telling them not to violate the law. And so in real terms, in practice, it operates almost the way it would under this bill. And we just don't, I just ask you, Mr. Chairman, no work group, please. Just have people, if they want amendments, have them spit out the amendments. We've had work groups on this issue till the sun won't rise anymore. And
the work group will be the two co-chairs of the committee.
Good. Thank you. That's all I have.
Any further questions?
I'd just like to say one thing. I enjoyed coming over to John Day and the museum, the Chinese Museum. But it is a long drive from Portland, and the last time I went over there, I was in the back seat of an F-15 Strike Eagle, and that's a much quicker trip.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome to come back any time, sir.
I'll be there.
All right.
I'll be back over.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Is it Elise
Cartier? We're down to about 5 minutes apiece for the remainder of the people that have got their testimony. That's only about what it's been running anyway.
I'm just going to pay it in payments. You can charge me interest. All right. So my property tax went okay.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Elise Gauthier. I'm president of Ceasefire Oregon, and we oppose this bill as well as the other reciprocity bill, which I see has been withdrawn. Let's pause for a minute and remember or try to figure out why the proponents want this bill. I've heard that we want to be courteous to others, which of course is always a good idea. And the other thing, but the only substantial benefit that I've been able to ascertain is that they want us to let everyone else in the country with concealed handgun licenses from everywhere else to be able to come here so that those states will not require them to get a concealed handgun license when they want to bring their guns to those states. So somebody wants to travel to Oklahoma and they don't want to bother to have to get the concealed handgun license for their handgun. That's the only benefit that this bill, from what I can tell, will give. Cut out a little bit of paperwork for people who want to carry their guns when they go on vacation. Don't worry, I'm not going to read the entire piece of paper that you've been given. I'm just going to summarize it. If this bill is enacted, it will enable anyone, as I think has been clearly stated, who has a license from any state, no matter how minimal its requirements, to carry concealed, loaded handguns in this state. Several states have requirements that are fewer than ours. I don't have a list with me. I'd be happy to get one. For example, Washington State does not require handgun safety training to get a concealed handgun license in Washington. And Washington State also gives licenses to non-residents. So if this bill is passed, everyone in Portland who wants a concealed handgun license will go right across the river to Vancouver, get one there because there's no training requirement in Washington, and come back to Oregon and carry their loaded handguns around even though they've never touched a handgun and never had a safety course. Why on earth do we want to let people from other states who can't meet our requirements carry loaded handguns in this state? Just because we can save a few people having to do the paperwork to get a license from another state when they want to go out of state. One option, of course, is that they don't need to bring their guns when they go traveling, but I'll set that aside. The fact of the matter is, unfortunately, all concealed handgun license holders are not law-abiding. people are able to get licenses in other states even though they can't qualify for them, and they can't also qualify to even have a gun. And after people who legitimately get a concealed license in another state, they, some, do in fact commit crimes. You have several studies, investigations set forth in my paper with footnotes telling you exactly where you can find them. One of them, this is a screen save from the main page of the Violence Policy Center. When you click on concealed carry killers, this is a total from May of 2007, when they started collecting the information, to December of 2010. People with concealed handgun licenses murdered 282 people, 9 of whom were law enforcement officers. The totals do not include people who were eventually acquitted of the alleged crimes. This is not self-defense. Other studies I cite in my paper here. In Florida, in the first six months of 2006, Florida issued concealed carry permits to 1,400 people who had pleaded guilty or no contest to felonies. They gave concealed carry licenses to 216 people who had outstanding warrants, 128 people with active domestic violence injunctions against them, and 6 registered sex offenders. That was in the first 6 months of 2006. Why do we want to let those people carry their hidden handguns in Oregon? Two different studies of the concealed carry licenses in Texas, one of which found that the largest category of problem licensees involved those who committed crimes after getting their state permits. The New York Times, all of this is available, almost all of this is available online. The secondary source for a couple of them is. The New York Times reported on Sunday, tens of thousands of gun owners brought their weapons legally, but under the law should no longer have them because of subsequent mental health or criminal issues. One person quoted in there, one expert, estimates that there are 180,000 people in this country who have concealed handgun licenses that should have been revoked. But states, because they don't have any money anymore, are not able to revoke all those licenses.
Can you summarize now?
I will summarize. We are letting, if this bill passes, we're letting people come in who should not have concealed handgun licenses, and we're letting them come in for the sole purpose of preventing people who want to take their handguns out from having to undergo a little paperwork. I would urge you to take a step to prevent additional mass shootings in this state by not letting any more in from other states if they can't meet our requirements. Thank you.
Any questions?
Just briefly, maybe you can't answer this, but when you quoted the New York Times, it says tens of thousands of gun owners. Does it also say that those were concealed handgun weapon owners?
I have stated what it says.
I know.
So you're right. I'm realizing this now. I did this about 1 a.m. this morning. So you're right. That may be just people who bought their weapons legally and should no longer have them. And I apologize for that.
I just wondered.
Did this about 1 a.m.
Okay. Thank you.
But it's right. The site is right there, and you can go and find that.
Thank you very much.
And obviously, if they couldn't have lawfully owned the gun, then they can't have a lawful concealed handgun license either. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Norris.
Very good. Okay. Dan Norris, District Attorney in Malheur County, representing ODAA, Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee. We're neutral on this bill, but we do have some practical enforcement concerns. One of them is a scenario where someone from another state tells the officer, I have a permit, and there's no records they can go to in the NCIC computer.
And what does the officer do in that case?
Do they take their word for it and not arrest them? Do they arrest them and risk civil liability? So if you're going to pass this bill, we would suggest you use language similar to what Idaho has, where a foreign permit is valid if it's physically in the possession of the person and upon request. And we have specific language in our written testimony that I need to change because I thought we were taking up 2415 today, that we would suggest you put in so that the police officer can see the permit, take the information down, and if the officer later on wants to go back to that state to make sure it's still valid because they have some concerns that it's not, they can find out if it's been revoked until we get a computer system in place. And we have one other concern, and I know that we've talked about we don't look into the driver's license requirements in other states. We do have some concerns that some state standards may be so lax that it would cause us concerns on the background check or the safety. And the language in 2415 or something similar to that would alleviate some of our concerns that we're sure that folks who have the weapons here are doing something at least substantially similar to what we want our own citizens to have in terms of training and background.
The reason we didn't go that way was because of the fiscal impact. And I talked to the state police, had them in the superintendent, and explained to him why.
And, you know, we don't do that for anything else, any other type of license we recognize. And if we had had an experience as a state, and you heard the sheriffs, you don't see the state police here saying we've had any type of experience that will lead us to believe that that's going to keep some type of a gun crime from happening. If we had a history of that going on, then I would agree with you. I do agree with the fact, though, and I'm going to be talking, I believe I talked to Rod Harder, I haven't talked to Kevin, about the requirement to have it on their person if they're a non-resident. That goes a long ways to giving some peace to, I think, some people. And so we'll be exploring that if we need to tweak that a little bit. And so, Kevin, you and Rod can get together and get back to one of us, if you would. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Greg Miller.
Good afternoon, Chair Krieger, Chair Barker. My name is Greg Miller. I represent the Oregon gun owners. I will be brief in that conceptually we do support a reciprocity standard in the state of Oregon. In the past couple weeks, we've engaged the sheriff's associations and the state police to ensure that the nuts and bolts of how the reciprocity agreement works take care of some of the concerns that Representative Garrett had and some other questions as far as licensing standards in other states. I think we would all agree we don't want to allow folks in other states a right that it was not allowed to a resident in Oregon, and that the standards would need to be uniform. You know, states like Alaska that don't have a concealed carry license, we'd want to address that issue and make sure that those folks are living up to the standards that Oregon must live up to.
Okay, the way the bill's drafted now, those states that don't have a system can't carry. If you look at that bill real careful, the words, if you don't have a system of licensing and it names, you know, the sheriff and the courts and other things, then we don't recognize that state. Any other further questions? Thank you, Greg. There's a name on here, but I can't. The guy says he's a firearm instructor. Is it Sal? And then also Dave Simmons. If the two of you want to come up, I believe you're the last two, unless someone else is in the audience. You want to come up again? Okay, come on up now. There's one behind you there. They'd be the last three. And we've got a little under 5 minutes apiece.
Okay, for the record, my name is Sal Casuccio, and I am a firearms instructor, and I also assist with other firearms instructors. And basically, I just want to say that I support HB 2792, and I basically want to say that I agree with the sheriff, Palmer, that it's essentially a tax for non-residents to come here and have to do that so they can defend themselves in case they're attacked. I wanted to make one point. In the language in the bill, it says that if the state doesn't offer a concealed handgun license to their folks, then they can't carry here. So the only state is Vermont, because even though Alaska and Arizona do not require their citizens to have a CHL to conceal a handgun, they still issue if you want it, because they know people go to other states that require it. So that's it. I'll be sure I'll be able to take any questions if you want.
Thank
you.
Mr. Castizio, nice Italian name.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that as an instructor, it's really important to you that people be instructed in the appropriate and safe use of firearms. Is that correct?
Well, I don't really know if, I mean, I believe in safety and instruction. I believe in it. I just don't believe in that the government or any state government should mandate it. So even though I am a firearms instructor, I'm a firearms instructor because the state of Oregon requires a handgun safety class to get a concealed handgun license.
So do you feel safer around folks who've taken your class than perhaps folks who haven't taken your class?
I'm indifferent.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. One of the other, if you want to.
I'll be very brief. David Biles, Medford, Oregon resident. Generally, I'll open with my support and leave it to this body and others more wise than myself to determine what the applicable reciprocity should be. I support reciprocity. I support 2792. 3 points in closing. First, to address the comments I've heard today during this hearing and also the original one from Cease Fire, Oregon. Please cease fire. Please cease your fire. I am scared to death just based on the comments. We are a free society in America. The comments I've heard today from Cease Fire American scare me to death because I believe the end result of that mindset and thinking is fear. And it is not American freedom. So please cease fire. You're scaring us all. Number two, the last two are anecdotal but lighthearted. In the last 3 years, I've traveled approximately 7 times across the United States on various interstates and highways, blue highways in this country. I've been in all 49 states, less Hawaii. My point is, in referencing the state's recognition and reciprocity list prepared by Oregon Firearms, what strikes me is the states I'm most scared of are the states that do not honor state permits and some of the cities therein. Anecdotally, you know, New York City, Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California. These are anecdotal, personal, you know, my personal. These are the cities that scare me when I go there, were I a permit holder or not. As a citizen of the United States, these are some of the places that scare me most to go. I am not scared in states that have reciprocity or concealed handgun carry. In closing, and more lighthearted, I'll address Representative Schaffler's concerns about Iowa. I've been an Oregon resident since February 2004. The 3 years immediately preceding my Oregon residency in first Jacksonville, Oregon, and now Medford, Oregon, I lived in Iowa for 3 years. I was a graduate student in Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State from approximately August 2000 to July 2003. At no time did I feel threatened as a citizen of Iowa under their Second Amendment laws. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I wasn't the least bit concerned about Iowa. I just want to get that on the record.
There's other things about people from Iowa that I'd be concerned about.
I should have ended with Go Hawks.
Okay. All right. Cyclone, sorry.
Start a football argument.
No.
Thank you.
You're last. I'm Dave Simmons. I've been here before, I think. Representative Krieger, members of the committee, a couple of comments. I feel much safer in the presence of armed people generally.
I've seen the expressions of fear of people just looking at guns. I was raised around them and never felt that way. And Representative Tomei, you know, I'm probably at the extreme end of convictions on this, but I would like to see mandatory firearms training in all the schools. Some of our some countries have that, and I think it would go a long way to demythologizing firearms and eliminating this deplorable aura that they have gotten as a result of the Hollywood media and the rest of them turning them into a symbol of some sort. That said, I'm in favor of this bill. I'm in favor of anything that expands people's ability to defend themselves. I think there's something that I see significantly missing in this discussion overall, and that is that criminals are going to get firearms. It doesn't matter whether you license people or not, and they're going to carry them concealed. And it doesn't matter whether you license people or not. Actually, the lady from Ceasefire Oregon has a point. If she's correct, which I question her statistics, but if she's correct, this means that criminals are going to get concealed weapons licenses. The whole point is that your problem is criminals. Now, when a police officer goes up and makes a stop of somebody that has a concealed weapons license, it generally tells them the person is safe. That's not what the police officer needs to know. They need to know when they're pulling over a criminal psychopath. Dr. Robert Hare has a book out. He's a criminal psychologist that has spent his entire career studying these people. They think that around 90% of police killings, shootings of police officers, are committed by psychopaths. These are people who have no conscience whatsoever. When they get pulled over by a cop, they're basically, the typical scenario is, I got pulled over. I'm wanted for something. Do I go to jail or do I kill the police officer? And to a psychopath, it's just surely a balancing equation with them. They have no conscience whatsoever. Now, you go a lot farther towards eliminating those kinds of scenarios by getting rid of the psychopaths among us. And additionally, some of the other, there are several categories of mental defectives that really commit these crimes. The paranoid schizophrenics are another. We just saw that in Arizona. You'll go a lot further by expending public funds on that than you will by licensing people at all in any fashion.
Thank you very much.
Any questions? Okay, anybody in the audience
want to come up? Thank you, gentlemen.
Dr. Hare's book is called Without Conscience. It's worth reading, and there's at least one FBI site that recommends that it be required reading for all police officers who come into daily contact with the public.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have anything further?
No, I think
good. If not, we'll close the public hearing on 2792. Thank you.